Hey folks, welcome to the show. Mr. Shirt, how are you? You're looking very dapper in this, in that pink shirt of yours, which we briefly discussed before Ritesh joined us.
Yeah, it looks pinker with the sunlight flashing on my shirt. But I'm excited about today's podcast. You know why? Because we've spoken to a ton of underwriters and creditors. Now we are speaking to someone on the other side, more sort of catering to the borrower. So I'm looking forward to today's chat.
Absolutely. Likewise. So we have with us Ritesh Shivastav from Freed. Hey, Ritesh, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, guys. Pleasure being here.
So Ritesh, you run India's first debt relief platform. What is it? Let's start with, tell us a typical customer pain point and the typical customer journey where Freed interfaces with the borrower.
Sure. So, and like the name suggests, right, Freed, India's first debt relief platform, right? The objective behind behind creating Freed was actually to offer an option or a second chance to borrowers who see themselves entrapped in debt, going deeply delinquent, and kind of, you know, facing an uncertainty or a gloom, so to say, as far as what their financial future holds for them, right? And of course, given the fact that we are dealing with a huge problem, which is evident from the growth in retail unsecured lending, especially with the newer forms of credit, emerging almost every quarter, right? Marry now, pay later, buy now, pay later, and credit on UPI and whatnot, right? App loans, fintech, I'm sure you guys are all aware. I mean, just about a month ago, the credit card outstanding reached almost 2 lakh crores, the highest ever. So as we see our millennials and Gen Zs increasingly more exposed to credit and consuming more credit, there was obviously a need for a platform that would help these guys if things were to go wrong, right? And exactly that's what Freed does.
Could you like describe what do you mean when things go wrong? Is it like is there a payment delay? I'm defaulting. I'm unable to pay back, or my credit score is screwed up for some legacy reason. What all classifies for things going wrong?
Yeah, we're not talking about the optics of the credit score in terms of score getting back due to some wrong reporting and all that, right? The idea was that for a customer who is in genuine financial hardship, who has fallen behind on his payments, right, and is constantly being harassed, by the collection agencies or by the lenders attempting to collect on him. And this poor guy doesn't even have the wherewithal to come up with minimum payments or even partial payments in that case, right? But is that guy... So
your customer has already taken a loan. So for a starting position, your customer already has a loan and is unable to service it for some reason? Or is it like a customer who is new to credit? And I mean... what would be the sweet spot for you?
So a sweet spot is someone who has a debt already, which has gone bad, right? And that means it's not a new-to-credit consumer. New-to-credit consumer, after having taken credit and gone into default, can come to the platform. But obviously, largely it is for consumer who has availed credit, right? And also paid his dues, when he could afford to, right? See, Freed is also a pull platform, Nikhil. We do not work with the lenders in attempting to collect their bad debts. We are a pull platform where consumers who are seeking to resolve their debt and become debt-free and become credit-worthy again are the ones who are approaching our platform, right? How does a typical consumer journey or who qualifies to, come and enroll for Freed, right? First thing first, if you have a debt and, fell behind on the payments due to mismanagement or due to overborrowing or due to a financial hardship, because, that's what life is, right? I mean, it can go bad. You could just lose a job or have a medical emergency or, suffer business losses. And suddenly you find yourself, falling behind on the payments. And what doesn't help is the fact that India as a country probably has the second highest interest rates in the world. We just come next to Indonesia. If you look at credit card APRs or the interest rates, right? In the US, you are capped at 29.99% for a guy who is extremely, low credit, right, mm-hmm. score. In India, we begin with 36, 42, and I don't know, maybe go up to 48%, right? Mm-hmm. So, second, you look at some of the app loans or, fintech loans or BNPL. I mean, we're talking about starting rates of 24% and 32%. I mean, trust me, I've seen loans which are at 100% and whatnot, right? Mm-hmm. Thankfully, due to RBI's crackdown, we are not seeing any of those predatory loans of going as high as 1,000, 2,000%. But we're talking about pretty high interest rate regime in India, mm-hmm. right? That compounds the problem. And what's the other thing that compounds is 65% of our population is below 35, right? Which means we have a huge base of borrowers who are young, right? When I say young, we're talking about, late 20s, early 30s, right? Just barely exposed to credit, exposed to large consumerism with riding high on their impulse and riding high on their need for significance, which is I have to have this new phone or I have to have this new gadget or whatever it may be, right? Mm-hmm. Or rather, what if I take a loan to go vacation, right? And pay that in EMIs or whatever APR interest rate it may be. There are consumers who are unsuspectingly falling in this trap, right? Mm-hmm. And like I said, if you look at the current ecosystem, until Freed, before Freed came in, right? It was very lender-centric, as in, if I'm a borrower and I have unfortunately fallen behind on my payments, right, I'll be subjected to harassment, collections, not to mention my credit score takes a hit, right? But I'll be subjected to all that and I'll be left in the lurch by the same financial institutions who were chasing me to give me a loan, right? Yeah. So the idea was not to create a Robin Hood, platform which will work for the borrowers and, take away anything away from the lenders. The idea was to create a platform that offers relief to these borrowers and at the same time creates a win-win for the lending ecosystem as well, so that they are able to salvage on their bad debts, which otherwise they would have had to write off or, send it to a, or sell it at a penny store dollar,
So Ritesh, when we speak to underwriters and a lot of these fintech platforms who lend on, unsecured lending, whatever, location or products or loans, one of the things we often ask them is, how do you manage collections? Because it needs a specific type of strategy. Some have outsourced it, some run an in-house call center. But they often say, our NPAs are so low, so it's working, but we're not too bothered about it. But in your case, right, for 100% of your business, at some point, you'll probably have to interface with a collection agent or an underwriter who's struggling to get his interest payments back. How does that conversation with the collection agent or the ultimate underwriter go? And what are the mechanics there? Is it sort of trying to get a margin in terms of getting them back whatever they want? Or is it sort of trying to buy time? How does that mechanics work?
Great question, Sharad. But let me come back to first, what are the commercials right now? Right. Or what does the landscape look like post the loan has gotten into default, right? Which could be, 30, 60 and 90 and beyond, NPA and beyond, right? And rightly so, most of the lenders have outsourced their collection activities to specialists, collect techs or brick and mortar collection agencies and so on and so forth, right? Just last year alone, $7 billion was spent, by banks as their collection spend, right? Or the budget rather was assigned to collection, right? Today, if you look at collection efficiency on loans that have gone into NPA, we are talking barely 15 to 20%, okay? Which largely means that once a loan has gone into NPA, 90 days beyond, will come to the technicality of, are the NPAs being reported right or not? That's a different situation altogether, different discussion altogether. But on the loans that have been categorized as an NPA, which is 90 days consecutive default or consecutive non-payment, right? What is the collection efficiency at best that we are seeing, right? 15 to 20%, not more than that, right? Number one. Lenders to recover that 15, 20%, they are also paying the collection agencies a good 15, 20% fee on what is being collected. Okay. Now, invariably, the collection agencies are incentivized to collect as much as they can. And quite often, they actually cross the line, which distinguishes a aggressive collection from a, you know, a harassing or a illegal collection practice, right?
Yeah.
And that is where I think the systemic flaw in the system lies, right? Let's look at the three pillars of a repayment, you know, how it is determined, right? These are three C's, they say. One is the character, the other is the capacity, and the third is the collateral, right? Of a borrower who basically wishes to repay. Of course, since we only work with unsecured credit, there is no collateral in question here because, you know, we are only into unsecured loans resolution, which is credit cards, personal loans, BNPL, app loans, and all that, right? Now, then there are two things remaining, right? One is the character and the capacity. Now, why is the collection agency largely sitting at a low efficiency? It's because they work on behalf of the lenders, reaching out to everyone, hoping that they have the capacity and the character as well, both, right? Character defined by the intent for the guy to pay, and capacity defined by the money that the guy has available after his expenses, right? From deducting his income. Now, this is the biggest challenge that is facing the collection agency. And that's the reason why their collection efficiency remains so low. In our case,
But this business logic, I would suspect, is already fed into the underwriting aspect. Like when you're, even before you're distributing a loan, they're probably assessing on the ability, on the character. And, you know, a lot of underwriters would claim that, you know, our NPAs are so low because we do this check and that is why we underwrite in the first place. So I would suspect that responsibility is more on the underwriting end rather than the collection end, no?
Not really. Sharad, look, I avail a loan today because, see, what is credit score? I mean, as you know, largely lenders will use credit score as as a criteria to offer somebody loan and then look at the bank statements and so on and so forth, right? Now, credit score will only showcase what your past is, okay? How you have handled your credit, what is your debt-to-income ratio or FOIR, what they call it, whether you have delinquency, have you been a responsible borrower or not, right? Bank statements again will show me, you know, what has my income been in the past, right?
Yeah.
Now, when life happens to an individual, right?
Yeah.
Nobody can look into the future, right? What if I have taken a credit, right? And I'm a blue collar worker, right? And tomorrow I am rendered, let's say, ineligible to perform my duties and my company fires me, right? Yeah. And I end up taking a job somewhere else which pays me less, right? Looking at the past, no underwriter would be able to determine, right? So that is where the problem lies, right?
Yeah.
I've taken it up with the bureaus as well, but, you know, for the sake of this, discussion, see, in India, I feel the entire credit ecosystem or the scoring, the algorithm has to evolve as well. We purely, if you look at the credit score composition, it's of five factors. You know, one is the payment history, your age of credit, your distribution of credit between secured and unsecured, number of recent inquiries you have, right? Your utilization of debt. For example, if you have a 5 lakh credit card, are you running up 4 lakhs every month and then paying, right? That's a very high utilization that can actually make you a risky borrower. Unfortunately, what we are seeing right now with the rapid growth or with the crazy growth in retail lending that is happening, right, that every lender is looking at increasing their share, you know, of the loan book, right?
Right.
And often you look at just what the score is, 750 hai, plus hai, that's fine, works well for us, right? I think the scoring itself has to evolve. Nobody is looking at, and I have evidence to tell you, we have another product which is the debt consolidation product that we work with as well. These are over-leveraged borrowers going paycheck to paycheck, but making their minimum payments. Can you imagine somebody like that with a 777 score? That's the average score that we have on debt consolidation. And if you look at US or UK, right, the allocation of your payment history, right, is just 35% on your score. Unfortunately, in India, I think that allocation is upwards of 75-80%. And that's the reason why I think we are faltering, or rather some lenders have to exercise more caution, look at more avenues or look at more, factors to determine eligibility, you know, for a person.
Ritesh, when we are looking at the unsecured retail credit space, and like you as a debt relief platform want to provide relief to the borrowers, what are the offerings in play that you bring to the table, in the sense that is it advisory, is it like, you know, settlement, is it negotiation with the underwriter, with the collection agency? Like, what all are the solutions which come on the table?
Sure. So we don't offer nickel kind of a la carte kind of solution to a customer. Mm-hmm. A customer who is going through debt, going through this emotional stress, right, does not even at many times know, can my debt be resolved for lower than what I owe, right? He's actually, debt is a negative emotion. It brings all kind of, you know, anxiety, fear, depression, frustration, call it, right? It brings all those negative emotions. When somebody is coming on the platform, freed, right? It's not a transactional decision for him, mm-hmm. right? Like what one would typically when they go to a bank or an aggregator platform seeking a loan, who's giving me the lowest APR, who's giving me the best terms, right? With Freed, it is not that. When a consumer comes to us, he's depending on us as a platform that will provide him and handhold him to a debt-free life, mm-hmm. right? And what entails there is basically, if you look at the fundamental of it, right? How do we achieve a resolution for a customer of his delinquent debt, right? It's a self-save program where a customer is saving money every month in a dedicated account that is created for them. That's separate, consider it like a piggy bank where he's saving every month, right? And we are utilizing the same funds to actually collectively bargain on the best possible settlement or haircut that we can get the lender to take, right? And offer that relief to the borrower, right? That's the way the model works. And it's a self-save program. And why it's a self-save program? Because the fundamental of a debt-free life begins with saving, mm-hmm. right? Only when you start to save, right? That's when you start to live, you know, a debt-free life and a financially, and you can wish for a financially secured future, right? So we begin that with, we know you screwed up, right? But you do deserve a chance, right? Now, let me show you how we can help you get there, right? We understand your income is 100 and your expenses are 70, mm-hmm. right? And your debt obligations are 50, right? So there's no way on earth you could have paid that, right? You have done this juggling for long enough. You have robbed Peter to pay Paul many times often, right? Now your back is against the wall and you've kicked the can long enough, right? To know that, you know, I have to come out of it, mm-hmm. right? That is where the realization and that individual happens. I can't live this way, right? It's time for me to make a move, make a decision, mm-hmm. right? And commit to a debt-free life. Now, this commitment is not just in words, right? It has to be followed through an action, which is customer depositing an e-natch through an e-natch auto debit from a savings account into that special purpose created trust account, right, where he's depositing that money, right? And that money belongs to him. It's just not available to him right now, right? He's saving that money. And as the corpus builds up, we're actually resolving this debt. You know, and when we go to lenders, we are resolving a portfolio, not just, you know, one individual's debt. When we go to a lender, we're talking about thousands of accounts getting resolved, right? And at that stage and that scale, we are able to negotiate the best saving for the customer, right? On account of his financial hardship, on account of his inability, but at the same time, a strong intent to resolve his debt.
So, I mean, does the journey start at the borrower's end, or it starts at the lender's end? Because like you mentioned that you look at things on a portfolio basis from a settlement standpoint, right? So is it like you go to a specific lender and you kind of takes a part of the book which is not performing in line, and then those borrowers are brought onto the platform? Or I mean, how do the mechanics work in terms of customer acquisition?
The sourcing or acquisition, Nikhil, that you mentioned earlier. Right?
Yeah, you said pull. So, but I'm just a bit thinking, like, how does pull reconcile with the portfolio approach?
When you pull, right, when you acquire customers through pull, eventually one customer on an average on our platform who's coming on the platform has 5 lakhs, 30,000, 40,000. That's the average debt load per customer across 4 or 5 accounts, right? So you can imagine with every customer coming in with 4 and 5 accounts and with us enrolling thousands every month, eventually you are creating...
But you do collective bargaining on their behalf with the absolutely, creditor. Absolutely. That's the...
Okay. I mean, how many lenders are there, right? I mean, typically, if you look at the larger market share, I mean, 80% of your retail loan book will be among the top 7-8 lenders any which way, right? So invariably, you will be settling at a portfolio level with these individual lenders, right?
But this is all driven by the like ring-fenced saving construct and customers' own capital, or do you also do refinancing?
No. We wait for the threshold to be collected for an individual, right? For example, 1,000 customers enrolled a month before, 1,000 enrolled today, and 1,000 enrolled 2 months before, right? Now, collectively, as they're saving money for the client who enrolled M-3, today would have saved enough to knock out, for us to be able to knock out his first debt, typically, right? Because on a 5 lakhs debt portfolio per customer, you can imagine not every debt will be, you know, 1.25, right? Mm. To make it across four accounts, 5 lakhs, right? Mm. Typically, the allocation is the first debt that we are seeing, or the lowest debt is roughly around 40,000-50,000, right? So how much do we need to resolve that 40,000-50,000, right? That's typically at 45%. That's the standard, reduction, or that's a standard settlement rate that we've been able to achieve in tens of crores that we've already settled with 105 odd lenders across India.
And, you know, once you sort of default and, we're sort of putting average ticket size 5 lakhs, whatnot, like the person's credit score is really damaged by that time, right? Does Freed work towards upliftment of that credit score? Or said another way, will that person be able to borrow again? Like, is that sort of possible? Another third way of putting it, will you have repeat customers? I mean, most businesses love repeat customers, but will you have repeat customers, I guess?
No. So to answer the third point first, no, we don't want, hell no, we don't want repeat customers in our business, right? Because then we would have probably done our job, right? If we're getting those customers to default again and come on the platform, right? Now, coming back to your first question, yes, the score is already badgered, taken a hit, and is sitting at probably 630, 640 on an average, right? Which indicates that the guy is already delinquent by a good 90, 120, 150 days, because the standard delinquency on the platform when a customer enrolls is upwards of 120 days. So you can imagine, right? Yeah. Second point, will we help in improving his credit? Nobody can improve anybody's credit, let me tell you, man. I mean, credit score is a regenerative process, right? And it completely depends on how are you behaving as a borrower? What are your financial, payment histories? What's the utilization of debt? It's all an eyewash. Somebody says, I can improve your score, by 50 basis points or 100 points or whatever it may be, right? It's a regenerative process and it has to improve by itself. Now, let's talk about somebody coming into a Freed's debt resolution program and what happens to your score. Mm-hmm. I kind of anticipated your question, right? So I'm answering that question.
Yeah.
So, somebody coming with a 640 already, right? Now, how bad can it get, right? I mean, okay, he'll drop down to maybe 500 if he continues to not pay, right? And he will continue, and he will probably be tagged as a willful defaulter once the account is past the write-off stage, right? Now, once you are tagged as a willful defaulter, you can imagine that, you can pretty much forget getting any loan, any new in the future. Right? Because write-off is a kind of quasi-bankrupt, right? The option more often than not for a customer who's coming to our platform is, do I want to be a willful defaulter or would I rather have my account settled, right? And I can tell you, 100 out of 100 customers in that situation are choosing that I would rather have my account settled than to have a willful default tag on my report, right? Now, about his possibility of getting a loan in the future, 100%. It's again a myth, I believe, has been spread by financial institutions to discourage people from, seeking a reduction, in the amount that they owe and all that. If you look at US, you look at UK, right? If a president was declared bankruptcy, if an American president, past American president, who declared bankruptcy twice, right? Why are we not talking about, resurrection of sorts in India? And moreover, settlement is not something new. We didn't invent that, right? I mean, it's been happening on the retail, on the banking side, corporate side for long enough. We know of many corporate houses who have gotten away with just paying 10%, 20% of the outstanding, right? And are they out of business? No, they're still doing business, right? Why not extend the same leeway to the retail buyer, right? Who has shown an intention to resolve his debt and kind of, you know, reset it himself. And the and if you look at the borrower base, right? The last 3 months shows, and this is RBI data, that new to credit NTC segment, right, has seen a decline in loans being offered. And why? Because obviously lenders have become more, I would say, watchful in terms of who to extend credit to, who not to extend to, right? Eventually, the rate at which we are growing our unsecured retail loan book as a country, right? I believe very soon, if these borrowers who are going to be defaulting or going to be falling into some sort of delinquency because of over-borrowing, over-leverage situation, right? If the resolution or what Freed is offering, if that is not introduced, we'll be looking at a pool of NPAs, pool of delinquent borrowers, right? Which is eventually going to impact the same lenders. Who do they lend to?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Do you ever get calls incorrectly from MSMEs and institutions who are sort of calling in to check, you know, I've also not sort of paid back? And then, because right now you guys are entirely retail focused, right? But is there an angle? First of all, I mean, people are not underwriting on the unsecured side so much to MSMEs anyway, so I understand that funding is small, but I'm sure that you get some inquiry calls from MSMEs as well, right? And is there an angle that you think is worth pursuing there?
So we might get there, Sharat, later, not right now. It's nothing on the cards because I think it's too big an ocean right now on the retail side itself, right?
Yeah.
MSME debts typically will tend to be of a larger ticket size, right? Yeah. And second, it's more complicated in terms of some asset backed and things like that. You know, we are already getting a lot of unsecured business loans that we resolve for our customers, which could be for a proprietor, you know, whatever, right? But I think MSME structured loans, which are backed by some sort of asset and all, is kind of, you know, before we get into that, would like to get understand the space a little better before we get into that. But I know there is a lot of stress built up there as well, and the ticket sizes are pretty high.
Yeah. And one more thing is, a typical example, like we talked about, like a salary is fixed. So, you know, and someone's probably leveraged so high that 80% of it is spent and then you have to service the debt. But there's a big chunk of people who struggle with working capital, right? I mean, who just struggle with the timing of the inflows. They're not sort of in stable income generating jobs, but they feel like, oh, I know that I could have paid back. It's just that my money's stuck somewhere else. The moment that gets released, I can pay it. So it's still a default from a bank standpoint, but is there an angle where you can play with timing sort of a thing that, you know, there is money that is being, he's sort of himself struggling because he hasn't received the cash inflows or time is. And is that a big enough case that comes up, or is it sort of mostly just people making poor decisions?
So I would like to disagree with the first point. I don't think it comes up that often, right?
Okay.
Where it's just a working capital issue or a cash flow issue,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Because and moreover, it would again apply only to, you know, SME borrowers, right? Or MSMEs, right? It will not apply to a retail borrower typically, right? Because 85% or 86% of the borrowers who are enrolling on our platform are employed, are salaried, right? So these guys have a fixed payday, right? So it's now to answer the second question, yeah, it is usually because of, Sharat, the way life happens, man. I mean,
it could happen
to you and me, anybody, right?
Yeah.
Life always doesn't go the way we plan it, right? I mean, you make some wrong decisions. And I mean, some people lose money in the market.
Yeah.
Some people lose money on, due to a pay cut, due to a job loss.
Medical
expense, right?
Yeah.
Anything, a new addition in the family, some health emergency, you know, anything can happen, right? I mean, that's life, right? And moreover, why while it's a concept which is new for India, I completely get it, right? And that's the reason why we are pioneering this and we're trying to build the best business practices and trying to be a voice or advocate for those borrowers who find themselves, you know, trapped in the situation. If you look at a matured retail lending economy, right, like a UK or a US or Australia and all, right, this industry has been around for decades, yeah. Right? US especially, 2 decades, right? And I've spent a good decade plus in the US, you know, building large-scale debt relief platforms before I, you know, founded Freed. Yeah. Now, it's a $50 billion industry in the US. Last year alone, $50 billion worth of debt was enrolled for debt relief. Right now, so this industry, believe it or not, will always be, you know, a function of what is the overall retail lending loan book, right? In India, we are sitting at 170, 180 billion right now in unsecured retail loan book, but the way at which it's growing at a 20, 25% CAGR, I think we'll be probably a trillion in about, you know, 7, 8 years from now, right? And that's when this becomes very sizable, because even at a trillion, a 4-5% NPA or default, right? Could be huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ritesh, like, if you, like you mentioned, say a customer comes to you when it's already like 120 days past due, and then you kick off a debt relief program for him or her, there is some sort of a, you know, corpus which is being built on the side, and then you kind of use that to collectively bargain against lenders and give them with a solution. But that all has a lead time, right? And meanwhile, what about things like, you know, legal support? I mean, the customer is getting harassed probably on a daily basis. You know, there is some sort of representation which is required. Is that something which is core to your offering?
Great question, Nikhil. And very well thought of, right? Yes, absolutely. It's a long journey. Right, for a consumer, typically we're looking at 18 to 20 months tenure, right? And the reason, and the simple reason is, right, I mean, you didn't accumulate all this debt in one day, right? I mean, it took 2-3 years of indulgences, right? So it's going to take the same amount of time before you come out clean, right? excuse me. So we understand the consequences a borrower faces while he's saving money and all the collection pressure and you know, the chances of a, you know, I mean, it's never a legal lawsuit. It's just a, you know, a demand notice with many unsuspecting borrowers think it's a lawsuit, right? So we do have that support. We have something, or believe it or not, we have something called CHPP, Creditor Harassment Protection Program, right? Which actually educates the borrowers on what their rights are. RBI is very clear in terms of, you know, what are the guidelines that the collection agencies have to follow? They cannot violate somebody's, you know, rights in terms of, you know, abuse, harassment, threats, things like that, right? So kind of Jago Grahak Jago movement, right, that we are doing through our platform by educating the borrowers on their rights, number one. Number two, now that the platform is a good 2.5 years old, right, since we have been into existence, and after having resolved debt with most of the lenders, right? We have kind of built a working relationship with most of these lenders, right? Where they know that a consumer who was enrolled with Freed is now saving money in the trust account, right? And something is coming our way.
Right.
So we are able to now deallocate many of these accounts from the collection agencies, which is a big mental piece or a relief to the borrower while he's saving the money, you know, for his debt relief program. The lender leaves him alone by deallocating that account from the collection agency. And let me tell you, the lender has an incentive to do that as well, because once he has deallocated that account, he doesn't have to pay the collection agency for whatever is collected, right? So that's another win-win, Nikhil, that we created in the process, right? Eventually keeping the customer's interest in mind, that while for the lender, it may be a financial incentive, but for my consumer, it's a... you know, huge mental piece, right? And again, Nikhil, we evolved. We didn't know it all. I hugely underestimated the collection menace in India.
Yeah.
And it was only after that we launched and we saw, okay, we enrolled 100 clients. What the hell? 90 went away. Why? And when we started speaking with them, we understood it's a big menace, right? And that's when we had to kind of, you know, introduce a collection harassment protection program, educating borrower rights through regular communication, nudges with the customers and all that, and including the working relationship with the lender. So we are still not there, but I think we're trying to bridge all these gaps.
Right. In terms of, would love to understand a bit about your revenue model. I mean, in terms of the basic mechanics, how it works. And secondly, are you ever tempted to kind of become like an asset gatherer in the sense get loans at a discount and then, you know, refinance them and get into lending yourself? Or is that something totally off the charts?
No, that's your investment banker hat, by the way, that you put on, by the way.
I'm always wearing that hat.
So, Nikhil, it will be just grossly wrong to do that, mm-hmm. to be honest. We are not in the business of double dipping or triple dipping here in this case, right? The objective is we want to bring the maximum relief for the borrower, yeah. right? Now you imagine if I end up holding that asset, right? It's a big conundrum for me, right? Where I might be jeopardizing my own customer's interest, yeah. right? By resolving that for a higher than what the customer could have got, right? Through our own efforts, right? Number one. Number two, our revenue model is, we charge a basic platform fee, which is charged monthly from the borrower, right? Which is
what is the default on that? What is the default on that?
Usually, if a customer has to stay on Sharat, right? He will stay on the program, will pay for the services because this monthly subscription fee covers him for all the entire CHPP activity, right. Any pre-litigation support that we offer, a dedicated relationship manager. There are 150 of us, right? We are not a non-profit, right? All the support that is offered to the customer, trust account management, a customer dashboard that's provided to the customer to tell him, what the hell is going on with this program, how soon. Because, see, it's a game of motivation and constant, right?
Mental
and,
support.
And through the dashboard, we kind of, gamify the dashboard by showing, hey, you're just one trust payment away from resolving your first debt. Sure. Look at what other customers who enrolled at the same time as you are performing. You are in the top 5%, right? Things sure. like that, which acts as a motivation, right? So the monthly subscription fee is something that we charge per month for being on the platform. And then we charge a success fee. Hmm. We charge a flat 10%, right, of the debt enrolled, but only when we settle it. Right. For example, a borrower has four or five accounts, right, ranging from 40,000 all the way up to 2 lakhs, right? So when we have resolved the 40,000 rupees debt for him, right, we will charge our 4,000 and then we move on to the next debt. Then we charge again as we resolve that debt. But we wanted to keep it more success-based so the customer sees, and essentially to create a massive value for the customer because it's a no-brainer for him. What does he have to lose, right? Yeah. He's saving this money. The money belongs to him, right? If we have not performed a service, that the money which is sitting in the trust goes to him any which way, right? So it's really a fairly easy decision for a borrower to enroll with us.
In terms of, I want to kind of get your view on a few macro points. I mean, not just to do with freedom, but in the space in general. Like we speak with a lot of lenders, right? And we speak with the a lot of collection companies as well through our normal course of the podcast. When you look at on the fintech end of the spectrum, companies like Simple, companies like Cred, their books are expanding at atrociously aggressive rates, right? And even Paytm, effectively Paytm is no longer as a listed stock. Nobody looks at it as a payments company anymore. It's effectively a lender, right? I, from a macro standpoint, do you see some sort of a, and you yourself mentioned how, clued in these lenders or these fintechs are to, because effectively the first rule of borrowing or a first rule of lending is that the customer who doesn't want to borrow is the best customer, right? And in this case, I don't think that's happening on a day-to-day basis. Do you see some sort of an asset bubble creeping in, driven by unsecured BNPL type of products? Second part of my question is on the collections end. We had a chance of meeting a few collection companies who kind of are now they advertise themselves as soft collection frameworks. SMS driven, call center driven, nothing physical. Customized landing pages with just put the right information to a customer to encourage them to pay on time, et cetera, et cetera. But you use the word collection menace. So I guess you're not drinking that Kool-Aid.
So let me address the second part first, right? And then I'll come to the macroeconomic in terms of, you know, what's my view on the thing, right? So now, while first thing, let's understand that, Nikhil, Sharad, we are not eating anybody's lunch here, okay? Connection guys have their own job to perform, and whether it's a collect tech through nudges or through constant reminders, motivation to the customers, or late stage collection agencies which is deploying fleet on street, sending people to show up at customers' doorstep and all that. We are not eating anybody's lunch. All we are saying is, when a customer has gone 30 days delinquent, I can take it that he may have forgotten to pay because he has so many creditor accounts, BNPL, some payments are odd, where you have to, that could happen. When a customer goes 30 to 60, I don't think customer needs to be told, hey, you forgot, mm-hmm. right? There's a problem, boss, that's why you forgot, right? And once he goes 60 to 90, when he sees the heat on the collection pickup, right? No amount of nudging and reminding him to be a good borrower is going to help. That's the time when it needs intervention, yeah. right? That's where Freed helps. Boss, what is the problem? Let's understand. You've come to me to resolve your debt. Let's look at your income. Let's look at your expenses. Let's look at budgeting for you, right? And see what is it that you can do, right? What is it that you can set aside, mm-hmm. right? No collection agency will get into budgeting with a customer.
Yeah.
No collection agency will get into the fact that, hey, you have to save. Let's start a separate account where you are saving money, right? See, we are, Nikhil, I consider ourselves or Freed as in a business of transformation. We are getting a debt burden guy and making him debt free. Only 1,000 so far, debt free, but inshallah, we'll have way more in the months to come, right? Now, to answer the question of the larger macro factors, right? Mm-hmm. So you're right about some cycles that we will see of contraction and expansion, okay? And this is largely used by, lenders any which way when looking at the consumer confidence index or the consumption growth, the inflation and different indexes, right? Now, we're just evolving as far as, if you look at ourselves as a retail lending economy, we are evolving. Moreover, if we have to pursue and we have to achieve anywhere close to our $5 trillion goal of the GDP, what do you think it's going to be riding on? Consumption.
Sure.
Right? And consumption always has been riding on the back of credit. It's investments that rides on savings. Consumption will ride on credit, right? Will the credit story go away or will we see some correction? Momentary correction in cycles will happen. That has happened in the US. Mm-hmm. I've seen two global financial crises in the US, and I could tell you that 2008, when the Lehman crash or subprime bust happened, pretty much all the lenders, right, restricted the limit of a credit card holder, as to what the balance was as the limit. Right. That means there was no additional limit available to any borrower, right? Now, did they change 3 months later? Hell yes.
Hmm.
Because, lenders make money when they lend. Right. Simple as that. So that business will not stop. Yes, some sort of rationalization or cautious lending will happen in cycles. But then there's the pressure of growing the loan book as well.
Got it. But but what's your verdict on, because most of the BNPL players, they are essentially looking at high frequency transaction data and they're using that to underwrite, right? I mean, what's your view on that? I mean, I understand it's a feature lending. It happens quickly. It's small check size. There's mathematical risk. All those things sound right. But the fact that there's someone like you means that it often doesn't work because it just paints it's throwing light on only a specific part of the complete picture for a borrower.
So, I don't think I'm competent enough to give a verdict. I can give you my opinion in terms of what's the trend that we're seeing on the platform and overall credit ecosystem, right? I think BNPL is doing a phenomenal job as far as offering accessibility to new-to-credit consumers, right? In the form of an UPI or, you know, for example, the likes of Paytm and MobiKwik, right? I think they're doing a phenomenal job in terms of, you know, democratizing credit in the form of, you know, one additional, repayment option through a credit, right? And the ticket size is being low, you're 100% right about it, right? My problem here is, or my concern here is that if you look at fundamentally, why does a loan go bad, right? And 99 out of 100 times, you'll be pointing yourself in the direction of, let us look at the means or the purpose of the loan, right? Mm-hmm. What was the purpose for? Mm-hmm. If the purpose is to live beyond means and to afford something or to buy something that you can't afford today, mm-hmm. right? Led by impulsive purchase, right? 10 out of 100, loan going bad, I won't even be surprised.
Right.
And that's exactly what's happening, mm-hmm. right? So I think in order to, so it's all, I mean, there's a lot of incentive, right, for the BNPL players, for the POS guys, for the merchant, right, and just one guy to bear all that, right? That's the consumer.
In terms of fundraising, you've raised some capital, you've done a pre-series A, but how was your experience with the investor community? Because effectively, like you yourself said, the solution here has a long lead time. There is some amount of structuring and customization required, right? I mean, there probably is some level of manual intervention also required. That, I mean, as an outside, from an outside-in perspective, that doesn't sit in that classic, you know, tech-centric scale type of a play. So,
hockey stick, as the place to like.
Yeah,
and I'm glad that perception has changed for good, by the way, right?
Yes.
So, and you're right. I mean, I did experience that in speaking with some tech-first VCs who were looking for the hockey stick, 1-2,000 story and all that, right? And honestly, this business does not even present that opportunity. And I've been very upfront, even when we raised the first round to my investors, right? If I'm enrolling 1,000 customers on the platform or 1,500 customers on the platform today, can I go to 15,000, right? No, the answer is no, right? Because I can't outpace the rate at which the NPAs or the rate at which, you know, customers are. Because that's exactly what has happened, right? Chasing unrealistic growth, right, has what has caused, has what has landed into this situation, right? So, with every business, and moreover, you know, we are a very capital efficient business, right? As a business, we are going cash flow positive in the month of August, right? So for a cash flow positive and a very capital efficient business like ours, right? Of course, it was a journey when we did our first round where VCs were not used to a model like this. And that's the reason why we had to raise from angel platforms, IPV, Inflection Point Ventures, led our round, joined by Multiply Ventures, early stage VC, great fund, again, you know, operator-turned VCs, who understood the real dhanda, understood the real problem, understood the magnitude of the problem. Mm. I mean, isn't that what businesses should be doing, right? Yeah. They should be solving a real problem. They should be solving a big enough problem, and they should be monetizing it the right way, right? And that's exactly what we are doing.
Yeah, and we like such businesses. I mean, we tell VCs now, do you want hockey? It takes 21 profitability. Clearly, I mean, if you need a path to profitability, that will, and we're seeing a turn in the general VC community as well in the last 6 to 8 months, who are sort of increasingly wearing the old school private equity hat, if you will, which there's a clear cash conversion mission and profitability.
Absolutely. Private equity, you said the right word, right? So we are actually, exactly. I mean, that would be my preference as well. Somebody who is very PE centric with a PE mindset brings the VC, staging and the feature, right? In terms of the check size, in terms of the stage, and things like that, right? So, yeah, exactly. That's the kind of fund that, will completely love our business, and we would love them as well, because I think they will have very realistic expectations as well.
No, Ritesh, I mean, this was a pleasure speaking with you and learning more about Freed. Wish you all the best, and you know, wish you better and bigger milestones in the future. We'll definitely be, you know, tracking and cheering on the sidelines. And no, this is Nikhil Arora. I have with me Sharad Tupran signing off.